Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Aleph. And we begin with the wrong quote from the Mishnah, which is usually the case with the printer. And so the daf begins with Hayu Shneihem Kohanim, which has nothing to do with anything. But what it's referring to over here is the continuation of the Mishnah that talks about if a person does not know which one of these possible men that she was married to without waiting 3 months in between, which one is his father. So the Mishnah talks about what the halacha is if he would be Mekalel or if he would be Makeh et Aviv, who is Aviv Misafek. So over there, it says he's not Chayev on either Mita, but suppose he hits both of them, then what? So Tana Rabbanan, Hikazeh v'chazar v'hika et zeh. So in the event that he hits both of them, or kilel zeh v'chazar v'kilel et zeh, so they're okay. I understand that we get into a problem of maybe it being a hatra'at safek, but what about if he was kilel shneihem bevat echad? So he's got a long stick, and he hits both of them simultaneously. I mean, over there, we shouldn't have any problem at all, right? Or if he was Kilel, obviously it's easy to Mekalel both, but even if he has a big stick and he's Ikar Shneihem. So according to the Tanakhama over here, he would be Chayev in all of these cases. And then it would mean Zo Ve'en Tzarich Lomar Zo. In other words, in a case where he hits them or curses them separately, we're over there, you would think there's a problem of Hatra'at Safek, because I can't tell the guy, hey, don't hit that guy. He might be your father. He might be your father. I cannot be Mechayev and Misa on the possibility. But even in a case where he's going to hit both of them, we're over there. I mean, it's a Davar Pashut. If you hold even if it has Rasafik, you're Chayev Koshikin there. It's okay. So that's a Zovein Tzarech Lomar Zo. And the reason that we would say it is because actually it turns out that it's a Machlokas. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, if you hit them all at once, then you would be Chayev. But if it was only Bezeh Acher Zeh, since it was a Hatra'at Safek, and you need to be able to give Hatra'ah, which you're going to tell the person, if you do that, such and such is going to happen. You're going to be Chayev Misa, which is not the case over here. He will not be Chayev Misa if he does that. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, the only time that he would be Chayev Misa is in the event that he did it both at the same time, because then it's Hatra'ah Vadai. Now, the problem is that Rabbi Yehuda and another Braita says that even if you hit them both at the same time with a long stick, you would also be Potter. Okay, that's true. There was actually two different approaches to what Rabbi Yehuda said. Now, I mean, I understand the approach in our Mishnah makes a lot of sense. If you hold out Ra'atza fake lav shmatra'a, and over here I'm giving him a hatra'a vadai only in the event that he has this long stick, right? That makes sense. But why would Rabbi Yehuda say that you are potter in the event that you hit them both simultaneously or that you curse them both simultaneously? Where would he get that from? So my time at the Manda potter, and this other brighter, Rabbi Yehuda says otherwise, wasn't it a hatra'ah vadai? Says the Gemara quite an amazing thing. It is a hatra'ah vadai, and nonetheless you're potter. The reason is, because we find two parshios in the Torah of Birkat Hashem. Obviously, Birkat Hashem is a reference to blasphemy. It's a reference to Klala, but we always, you know, use the Lashon of Borech. We never want to use the Lashon of Kilel by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chas V'Shalom. So even though we have basically two psukim, one of them is about someone who is a Mikalel, which is the whole parsha of the Mekalel. And over there, it talks about someone who is Mekalel, ish ish ki kalel alohav, and asacheto, and so on. So there, the Lashon is Mekalel, and so is Mekalel avivimo, mot yumat. So we have two psukim that use the same idea of klola. So just like when someone is chas v'chalila, when we talk about klola, klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no kind of possible, maybe it's another God, right? That's the whole point over here. So you know that you are referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Aflamata, the same idea of Kalola, Well, remember that hukash kvodam lechvod hamokom, this is a big issue, that the kibud avaim and the issues that are related to avaim are always compared in the Torah to the way that a person actually relates to HaKadosh Baruch. You remember the sugya of I'll get up because the Shekhinah is entering the room and so on. So the same thing is true over here. In the halacha of Birkat Hashem, we know that it's clear what you are saying. And therefore, the kolola, even though over here it may be a hatra'at vadai, it's not really a kilolat vadai. And therefore, what does this have to do with haka'ah? We'll see in a moment. But in terms of kolola, we compare the two. It and there, how do we know also the haka'ah? Because it ki shaka'ah liklala. So we have over there, Makel vivimo mot yumat, right next to Mikalila vivimo mot yumat. Of course, there's a little secret over here, which is it isn't really right next to. There's a very strange interruption between these two psukim. Gonev ishu mechoro mot yumat, like, whoa, smack bang in the middle. So obviously, it's not so poshet that this is called a hekesh. And this actually is a big machlokas, but in the Gemara. But all right, so we're going over here according to the Man Yomer, who holds that it's a hekesh, even though there's the other pasuk in the middle, and explains the relationship to the other pasuk. And therefore, once we've proven to our satisfaction, because of the comparison of klola, which is lamala, to klola, which is lamata of avaim, we can also compare klola to haka, and therefore say in the same way that the klola is only a chiyuv when there's no doubt as to whom it is that you're being mekalel, so too is the haka'ah, only considered to be a haka'ah that's b'chayev misa, mot yumat, in the event that it is without any doubt about who it is that you're being mekalel, even though we know you're definitely going to be mekalel, in this case, the father, if you did both. Okay, the next sugya we have is that he's Eile, this guy who doesn't know who his father was. This was the basis of the kasha that we had on Shmuel yesterday. If he doesn't know who his father is, so why is it called Zaracha Acharecha? He should be posel for the Aveda. The Mishnah says he's not posel for the Aveda, and he goes up and he can actually do the Aveda in both of these mishmorot. So he can't take anything from them because Amotzi Michaver all of Araya. So he can't take a portion which will lessen the availability of the portion for the people that are working in the mishmar. They can say, look, how do we know that you're from our mishmar? But he can actually be ole. Well, why is he going up? I mean, if he's not going to get any good steak out of it, why is he going up to work in the mishmar? It's a very strange question. Would anybody go to the Beis HaMikdash if they're not going to get any steak? Says the Gemara, what kind of weird question? What do you mean, lama ole? What's wrong with you? A guy wants to do aveda in the Beis HaMikdash. You're asking, lama ole? Omar, be'ina denavid mitzvah. The guy's saying, I want to do a mitzvah of aveda. Well, that doesn't make any sense. No. You don't understand what I'm asking. I'm asking lama, quote, ole, unquote. That's what I'm asking. You see? You understand? Obviously, I know why he's going up, but why are we using the word ole, right? Ah, so that's coming, because what we could have said, what you should have said, is Allah, if he goes up, then he can eat. But if you say ole, why are we saying ole? I'll tell you why. Ole means he goes up whether he wants to or not. He's going up, man. Let me tell you one thing. He's going up because we're going to make him go up. So, okay, so then why? Why are we saying that we're going to make him go up? The point over here is that each of the mishmarot can force him to come up because they have a stake in it. And the stake is, this is the other stake, not the one that we were asking, why is he being Eila? There is a stake in it. And the stake in it is that if people think that, I mean, after all, the guy has been associated with both families, right? I mean, he's not sure who daddy is. So because of that, he's connected to both families. So each one of these mishmarot say, what do you think people are saying about us? when you are seen walking around the street while the entire family is up there working in the Beis HaMikdash. I'll tell you what they're saying about us. They're saying, what a family. They father Chalalim. This guy can't even go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Even worse, he doesn't care about it. This we will not tolerate. It reflects badly on the entire family. So therefore, they can force him to go up. Both of the Mishmarot could do that. And if both of them are for the same Mishmar, continues the Mishnah, so then he's able even to get a stake in their stake. So how is that? So why are we talking about the difference over here between two Mishmarot and one? Obviously, because if there's two separate Mishmarot, he goes to Mishmar A. Mishmar A says, you don't belong with us. You belong with Mishmar X, who your daddy is. He goes to Mishmar X, and Mishmar X says, no, you belong with Mishmar A, who your daddy is from. In any event, they can both be matrehim, because he's going to have to prove who he is, which he cannot do, right? But then if that is true, then it's also true about even if he's the same Mishmar. Because then Mishmar Echad, every Beit Av, remember that a Mishmar doesn't work all at once. The Mishmar is separated into Mishpachot, each of which is given, what's called a Beit Av, each of which is given one day of the week of that Mishmar. And therefore, if he comes on Sunday, so then the Sunday Mishmar, not the Mishmar, but the Beit Av, will say, why don't you go to the Thursday Mishmar? Because maybe that's where you're from. So it would be, even within Mishmar, it would be the same thing. Each Beit Av is matreim to another Beit Av. Azulahat Beit Av umatrele ve'azulahai Beit Av umatrele. Amr Papa, you're right. Of course, when we're talking about in the Mishnah, about the same Mishmar, it means that literally the same time that they're working. It means both the Mishmar and the Beit Av are the same. And that would be the only way that he would be able to do this. That would be how to understand it. So then that's what, basically, to read the mission like that. Ima yushnehem mishmar achad u Beit Av achad, of course, notel chelek achad. And now we come to a very important moment in our lives. Hadran alach nos imalanusa, ready for... Now this was an amazing day because we had a full performance by our capitan, not under duress. You'll notice that Doc is nowhere here, which proves that he still can do it on his own. Okay, if that's the case, let us begin b'simcha. Moving on now, after all of our dealings of the issue of the different yichusim with which Yibum is so profoundly concerned, it is time to start talking about chalitza. So chalitza is basically a disregard of your own genealogical history because you refuse me'en yabmi la'akim shem la'achiv. And the whole idea of the concepts bichlal of chalitza, according to the Rishonim and according to the Ga'anim, is all part of the disgust that we want to show to people who do not care about these relationships that are genetic. So as the various Mefarshim and its Midrashim, but to some of these points, that the reason that we take off his shoe is because we're showing him, you have just killed your brother. Now your brother's really dead, and therefore you need to be mitabel alav, by just like an avel takes off his shoe. And the reason that we spit at him is because we say, all you needed to do was give a little bit of body fluid to take care of your brother. Let her shoot some body fluid at you. You want a piece of spit, or you're worth a piece of spit, and so on and so forth. So, and then everybody announces, yes, this is the kind of guy that is chalutz anal, chalutz disgusting. He kills his brother and doesn't care about the connection that he has with his brother, and so on and so forth. So Mamela, it relates to the dinim of Avilut as well, and we treat him as if he's an Avel, but that he's the murderer. So the idea of following, we finally get to Mitzvah's Chalitza after dealing with the elements of Yibum that are so firmly focused, as we've spoken about all along, so firmly focused on the issue of commitment to your own DNA, is now at a very appropriate place to begin talking about the Mitzvah's Chalitza. Therefore, says the Mishnah, here's the dinim, the fundamental dinim of Chalitza. First of all, you need to have Shlosha Dayanim. So you need to have three judges. Now, normally when you use the word Dayanim, you are referring to a Dayan in Bezdin. A Dayan in Bezdin, a Dayan in Sanhedrin, is a Mumcha, is a Somuch. But then it goes right along to say, but they don't really need to be Dayanim. They could even be Shloshtan Hedyotot, which, make up your mind, are we talking about Shlosha Dayanim? Or are we talking about even Hedyotot? So that we don't need the members of the Ziknei Iro does not mean of the Sanhedrin of Iro. Okay, apparently we'll see how we know this. Now, furthermore, as we're going to see the limudim to all of these halachas, the chalitza needs to be done with a min'al. So if he was chol, it needs to be done with some type of na'alo. Okay, so suppose you use what we call a min'al. It's not, there's a lot of machlokas in about what precisely is meant by a min'al. According to Rashi, a min'al is a soft leather shoe, which if it is ripped, it cannot actually be repaired because it's too soft. So if a piece of it comes out, and then well, you'll have to sew on another piece over it, and that's not called a nal because it's not protective. And we learn out from a pasuk that the and alech tachash means I will put you into something that is protective with thick skin, right? So I'm gonna cover you with an elephant skin or tachash skin, and therefore it needs to be a type of min'al where we would not be worried about maybe somebody using a type of min'al that is mirupat, that's repaired with patches, is not sufficiently protective. And therefore, the Rabbanan said, lechatchila, do not use a min'al, because the derech is to patch them up. Use only a sandal. Now, again, there's question what precisely is a sandal. But one thing is clear. The sandal is made out of hardened leather. And therefore, if it cracks and breaks, there's no way to put a patch on it. And because of that, there's no gezeira. Therefore, we want you to use specifically a sandal. Now, the question of does the sandal have a top or not, those are the things that we'll see later on, what exactly we mean by it. If you used a min'al as the na'al, the chalitza is kosher, but only b'di'avad, because we don't want you to come to use a min'al that is mirupat. Okay, but if you did it, so you didn't use a sandal, so then you're kosher. Suppose you use slippers or kippi shoes, as they call them around here. So they're, you know, a little old kippi from Sesame Street. So those were the popular slippers for many decades because of the Israeli Sesame Street. I don't know how many of you have been here long enough to remember kippi, but they're called kippi shoes. So you still go into a store, you ask for kippi shoes. So they give you these cloth slippers. Kind of thing. So if you use that, then it would not be kosher because it's just basically a sock for all intents and purposes, and that is not something that is protective at all. So we'll see again, as I mentioned the pasuk before, why it is that we need the analech tachash and leather and protective. We're trying to talk about other things that are hard, like wood, soon. So over there, chalitza tapsula. How about a sandal sheyesh lo akev? As long as it's a sandal that has a sole, it's kosher. But if ein lo akev, so the mashmaut over here is Pepash is referring to the back part, either the back part of the part that keeps your foot in place or the place that comes under your heel, which now we use as two separate parts. You have a heel and you have a sole. Others learn that it means literally that it's missing the entire sole, but then only the Rebbe knows about that, where the Rebbe's walk with in a fancy shoe, but it has no sole because they don't want to be stuck up. So they're walking on the ground. They only look nice That's why it's called a soul, because of the way that it's good for your nefesh. Anyway, so it reminds me, one of the guy is currently a big Rosh Yeshiva. But when he came to Eretz Yisrael as a kid and he needed to have some work done on it, I'm sure he needed to replace his soul. He walked into Meir Shorim in one of the shoe shops that were on the street, and he asked them, Yesh lecha neshames? Anyway, didn't get very far. So, a sandal, she'ein lo hakevis pasul. Now, suppose the guy, the brother over here, is an amputee. So now, he can't really wear a shoe on a foot because he doesn't have a foot. So what is the din over there? That if the foot was amputated from the knee downwards, so then he can put a shoe on the stump. And if he does that, then the chalitz is kosher, as long as it's min harkuva v'lamata. Min harkuva v'lamala, then it's not considered to be regel at all, me al raglo, and if it's above the knee, then it's not considered to be a chalitza at all. How about if she does chalitza to his shoe, but it's not his? So the question is, doesn't it say na'alo, which would mean l'chora, that it would be possible if it wasn't his? Nonetheless, says the Mishnah, that it's kosher. And if he uses a wooden sandal, or he's wearing his left shoe on his right foot. So in all of these cases, the chalitz is kosher. Now, this still leaves open, and we'll see later on that that's a machlokas. How about if she does chalitza to his left foot? So this is starting off really the right way. Right? So she does the chalitza on his left foot. What would be the din over there? Machlokas. Chalitza begadol. What about if the shoe is really too big on him? But it's not that big that he can't walk in it. He's able to walk in it, but it's, you know, it's like not comfortable. Shu yachol halochbo. Suppose the shoe was too small, but at least it covers most of his foot. There was a whole lawsuit with Cinderella who claimed that it was really her shoe and so on. This was a big problem that this Mishnah caused. So it was a katan shu chofe et rov raglav chalitzata kisheiram. Now, what in the world does the Mishnah mean? It says chalitza with three dayonim, and then it goes right in and it says, well, you can really use hedyotas. Which way is it? I mean, if you're telling me that you can use shalosh hedyotas, why did you start saying that chalitza is b'shalosha dayonim? What does that mean? No, because you need some element of dayonim. Remember that the halacha of chalitza is that the all of the psukim that are mentioned in the chalitza, all of them have to be said b'loshon hakodesh. And therefore, if these guys are like most yeshiva bochrim and they cannot pronounce words correctly, so then the chalitza will be puzzle. So you need to have people that know how to read or that know how to make another person pronounce the psukim properly. That's why it says dayonim, because otherwise they're going to say, remember, the Yavam has to say b'loshon hakodesh. We learn it out from a pasuk. Lo chafatzti lekachta. Do you say that with a mapikei? Do you just say lo chafatzti lekachta? Who? What? Lo chafatzti lekachta. What language is he speaking? So over there, the question is, do they know how to properly pronounce a word? So he would have to say that. Then she has to say also b'loshon hakodesh. Me'ein yabmi, and so on. And then everybody has to say the chalutz hanal, and she has to then say after she does it, kochar yeaseh le'ish, is that yeaseh? Because most people that lane, even if they're Israelis, are not mechalik between yeaseh and yaseh. It sounds exactly the same, you'll notice, mind-boggling, but that's the way it is. Listen closely next time in your kriya, you'll go and hit the guy. But anyway, so because of that, we need some element of dayanut, that at least he should know how to read it out to them properly. Kamash melan de be'inan b'shlosha sheyodim lahakrot ke'in dayanim. I sound like I'm being facetious, but the fact that the Mishnah mentions that it's necessary to find people who can properly read, and that that's called ke'in dayanim, is a tremendous gilui. In other words, it means that it is not correct to take for granted that if people are mumbling and they're saying words be'erech, but that means that they're yodim lahakros kedayanim, and that we're insisting over here that the psukim be read properly, and that is a chiyuv that is put into the Mishnah that shows you the level of the hakpada of proper pronunciation, and not stam saying things because, well, you know what I'm saying. That's not called reading the pasuk in the Torah. Tanina lohada tana rabbanan mitzvat chalitza b'shlosha shiyodim lahakrot kein dayanim. This is basically the Braita. By the way, once we're in the Braita, we already hear a different shita that wasn't mentioned in our Mishnah, namely Rabbi Yehuda shita. Rabbi Yehuda says you need 5 people. So, okay, so where does the Tanakhama get 3 people? Well, and it's pretty clear, isn't it? It says, Va'altayevim to hashara el hazikenim. Now, the minimum number of zikenim is 2. A Beit Din can never be an even number, because the whole point of a Beit Din is, as the Pasuk says, Acharei Rabim. So a Beis Din needs to be able to paskin. Now, there's 2 ways of understanding this. Tosis raises both possibilities here. The Beis Din has to be able to paskin in the event that there is an issue. Okay, what do we do? So they can't be an even number of people, because what if one holds one thing and one holds the other thing? The question as to whether this is specifically in cases where a psak might be necessary because there are machlokas in about the din, or whether it's a general definition of the meaning of the Beit Din, is taken up by Tosfos. But in either event, Tosfos points out there's many machlokas in terms of the halachas of chalitza, which would require a psak. So it makes sense that when we say zikenim, even if you hold it, it has to be specific to the case, zikenim would include 2 plus 1, because ein beit din shakul, which gives us mosifan leim od echad, harei kan shlosha. So that's the Tanakhama. Where does Rabbi Yehuda get 5? Out of just the mention of Zekenim, says Rabbi Yehuda, well, it says Zekenim twice, doesn't it? It says Ziknei Iro, Vikarulo Ziknei Iro, Vidibruela. So there's twice a mention of Zekenim. Now, the truth is that there's thrice a mention of a Zekenim, because it says Vinikshayevimto, again, by the spitting, it says Vinikshayevimto Elav Le'enei HaZekenim, where she's Yoreket Alav, right? So Rashi says, but that mention is HaZekenim. HaZekenim with the is a reference to the aforementioned Zekenim, right? Otherwise, I mean, like, why are you saying HaZekenim? So therefore, if it's the definite article, then this is the real thing. That's already been Zekenim. So it's referring to Zekenim that we already know about. It doesn't add an additional Zekenim. Tosfos argues on this based on other places where we don't say that ha means the above mentioned and therefore doesn't add. And he twists these psukim around. But this is the way Rashi understands it. Ha Zekenim is not registering here. Ziknei Iro, together with the opening of Ela Zekenim, those are the the first Zekenim is that it's the Hashara El HaZekenim, but over there was no aforementioned Zekenim, obviously. Okay, so therefore, he says, Rabbi Yehuda, we've got 2 plus 2 equals 4, but that would give us, again, a split decision, and a Beis Din cannot have split decisions. Because of that, we have to be Mosif and Odechad, and now we have Chamisha. And that explains both of our Shitot. Now, the question is, according to the Tanakhama, why are they not darshaning Ziknei Iro to add another 2 Zikanim the way that Rabbi Yehuda? What do they do with the Ziknei Mayavidle? Oh, they say, that's the point. If you already told me that she has to go to the Zikanim, right? So then why does it mention again Vikarulo Ziknei Iro? It could just say Vikarulo. So that's the point. By stressing once again, Ziknei Iro, it's saying, whoever's available locally. So if you don't have a real Sanhedrin, you don't have people that are roy to be Dayanim, that's coming to add that they're also kosher. Okay, that's what we do with that. But then how does Rabbi Yehuda know Shlosha Adyotot? Since according to Rabbi Yehuda, I use both mentions of Ziknei to tell me the numbers. What right does he have to do that instead of being Doresh Zikneiro, the way the Tanakhama is Doresh, that it means Afilu Had Yotot? Where does he know Had Yotot then? Reb Yehuda, where did he get the idea that the Mishnah says Had Yotot or Kosher Minole? Ah, that he learns from the words Le'enei HaZikenim. So he says like this, Le'enei HaZikenim means that they cannot be blind. So then he says to himself, well, why do we need a pasuk to tell me that they cannot be blind? From there, I know that they must not mean Zikanim of Sanhedrin. Why? Because if it would have said the Zikanim Stam, and they would have meant Zikanim of Sanhedrin, there's never allowed to be blind Dayanim. So even though justice is blind, the Dayanim cannot be blind. They have to be able, they have to be able to see. And we learn that out from any mum is possible for Sanhedrin because of Kulach Yafa Ra'ayati Umum Einbach. So we're talking about the beauty of Dayana Yisrael and what it is to be Eimed Lifnei Elohim. It has to be in front of perfection. So why do I need a pasuk to tell me they can't be blind? Of course they can't be blind. So therefore it's a given that the meaning of the pasuk is that they are not taken from among those who can't have any mum. Must be that they're hadyotot. Lovely raya to Rabbi Yehuda. Because Isalka daitach Sanhedrin be'inan lamerli lamuate sumin. Since Rabbi Yosef already explained, and I can learn it from him, mitatani Rabbi Yosef nafka, mitatani Rabbi Yosef. Kishem shebeidin minukim betzedek. In the same way that they are known for their justice, Kach beidin minukim mikol mum. They cannot have any mum. Shnema kulach yafara yati umum einbach. Aha. So then what indeed is Rebbe? Oh, that seems to be a very good rhyme. What did Chachomim then do with that? I mean, so then what did they do with the le'enei, the Tanakhama? Mayovide. Ah, they say that's coming to tell me Ravas Chiddush. That Sriche Dayani Lamichse Ruka de Kanafim Bikpumadi Yavama. The Dayanim have to actually see this spit that is coming out of her mouth, not just that they see the spit where it landed in front of him, that the Eureka per se has to be seen. If it isn't seen, they tell her, do it again. Oh, so wait a minute. So then Reb Yehuda also should need it for that. Oh, what a shame. This was such a nice drasha. So what is Reb Yehuda? Yividach nami bibay lelik and rava. Crumbs. Enoch nami, okay. This is true. I do need it for that. Okay, so then how does Reb Yehuda know Had Yotot? We're back to the original problem. Because after all, he uses the Ziknei not to add Had Yotot. He uses the Ziknei to tell me this new halacha over here, which according to him was the idea has to be that he learned out from Kulach Yafarayati. He uses Ziknei to add two more Zikanim. So then he must know Had Yotot from somewhere else, but where? That he learns from Yisrael. Because it says over there, Me'enia Milakim Shem Dafka Yisrael, Be Yisrael. So therefore, Be Yisrael means any Jew is good. Be Yisrael. As long as he's Be Yisrael, he's okay. So apparently, even though she's standing in front of these Zikanim, she's saying he doesn't want to do it Be Yisrael, so they must just be regular guys of Yisrael. Hey, that's interesting. So then why doesn't the Tanakhama learn it from that? So the Tanakhama, what do they do with this word Be Yisrael? My Ovidle. Ah, that we need for later cunning Reb Shmuel Bar. Meanwhile, of course, this is the way that the Gemara always chooses so that we can learn out 20 different things, find out all of the halakas up front while pretending just to be interested in the psukim. But meanwhile, we've gone through the psukim plus the main diukim from this psukim in terms of the halakha, which is a great way to introduce the sugya for us. So what did they do with the Tanakhama? What did they do with Yisrael? That we need for Reb Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Because Reb Shmuel Bar Yehuda says, Be Yisrael means Be Beit Din Shel Yisrael. But you cannot use a Beit Din of Gerim, because the whole idea over here is that we are learning the whole commitment to the entire history of Yisrael. The Edoch, so what does Reb Yehuda do? How does he know that? He says it says Be Yisrael twice. It says Vikarash Shmo be Israel, Beit Chalutzanal. So we already know that it's be Israel. So what? Why do we need this other Yisrael? That teaches me it could be anyone. Okay, that's what Reb Yehuda does. And the Tanakhama, what do they do with the second be Israel? That comes to tell me another halacha that maybe you didn't know about. Mi boile likid Tanya. And that is Omar Reb Yehuda pa'amachata, you know, Yoshvim lifnei Rebbe Tarfon. And a Yevoma comes into his bezdin and asks for chalitza. So he said to us, okay, guys, get ready, because when we do this chalitza, you all have to say, chalutzanal. So by putting it together, v'karishmo b'Yisrael, so that means that everybody's standing there, all of us, we weren't part of the bezdin, but we were there in front of him. All of us have to say the chalutzanal. So how does Rabbi Yehuda know that? Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it says v'nikra. I mean, vinikra means you're supposed to call it out. I mean, we don't need to say, I mean, what do I need the word Yisrael for? It means that whoever's there, vinikra, that is, it's said over here, not that anybody does it, but that it is nikra, right? That's a passive sense. So vinikra means that it will have been called out. If it was referring to the Dayanim, it would have said vikaru. Since it says vinikra, obviously it's referring to anybody standing there. Wait a minute. So now, if you're telling me that each time it uses the word of a plural, it means two, why don't we add another two from the fact that it says vikar'u lo zikne iro? So vikar'u should mean another two, and vidibru elav is another two, which adds four, which means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we should need nine, because we're adding four more to the five, and according to Rabbanon, we should need seven. I never heard of a shita like that. Is that what you're going to tell me? That L'Rab Yehuda, now that you're telling me that every time that we use the Lashon Rabim over here is meant as an additional two. So are we going to say nine and seven? No. That's coming to tell me a different thing. Vikar'u is coming to tell me that there needs to be a kriya, you see, and that it needs to be their kriya, not v'nikru. Because the point over here is they cannot appoint a court agent, which normally would do. Let's say they're sending a summons, normally, right? So you send a shliach bezdin. So you would think that for chalitza, you could send a shliach bezdin. No, this is not a summons that can be sent. It's not the fact that there is a summons, which would have been v'nikra, but rather it's the fact that the court personally comes. It's all part of this new issue of the personal involvement of everyone there to the commitment for the genealogy of Yisrael. This is not something that we give to a shliach. This is nogea us personally. They knock on the guy's door to bring him to Bezdin. The Dayanim come themselves? Yes. And we don't say in this case that a shliach shel adam kamoto. As a matter of fact, Rishonim ask, let's learn out from here that ain't shliach shel adam kamoto. Because, I mean, why would the Torah say you cannot use a shliach? Fine. And then when it says v'dibru elav, what does that come to tell me? That comes to tell me that you do not use a court-appointed psychiatrist to deal with this issue. That it has to be worked out for the guy. Now, this is very common, by the way, in dinim of gerushin, let's say. People want to get divorced. They have to go to a marriage counseling for 3 months. The person drives them crazy. So, okay, over here, get them out of your hair, you know. Okay, why don't you want to take care of your brother? You got some problems, a sibling rivalry. Maybe you need a Freudian psychiatrist, whatever. Send him to a psychiatrist, right? Kamashmalan v'dibru elav. They have to be able to handle personally the situation. And that even though you'd say, I mean, the terrorist says to do yibum. So why are we discussing the psychology of it? Because remember, and we've seen this before, the issue of Abba Shaul and the complexities of the psychosexual complexities that are here in doing Yibam, that, I mean, it's somebody who does Yibam for the wrong reasons. It's, the whole thing is Karav Beinai, that the Vlad is a mom. I mean, this is crazy stuff because, I mean, this is part of the entire contrast between the Isra of Arias and the Mitzvah of Arias. It's very confusing. So obviously it's going to require psychiatrists. So the issue is over here, Who is the psychiatrist? The court? Or some weirdo who went to school because he knew he was crazy? That's the question. So therefore comes along the Torah to say they have to go ahead and give him the Eitzah. So let's say, Imayahu, who yelled, Vizakeina, or who Zakein Vielda? Obviously, what we're looking for is a sustainable marriage. That's the first thing. Yibam is not just about getting a woman pregnant. That's a very important point. It's like this, you'll say, okay, so Yibam, you know, all right, so we'll sleep together once and I'll give her a get. That's not what it's about. It's about providing an actual shame. This is a tremendous chiddush, right? Because, I mean, let's say in terms of period of Arivia, so then the ability, obviously I can impregnate somebody. That's not the point. Otherwise you'll say, okay, so he can't get married. So let him impregnate someone who'll be Mekayim his mitzvah period of Arivia. It doesn't, let him give a donation to a sperm bank and it'll be Mekayim period of Arivia. That's not the point. The mitzvah isn't that there should be children. The mitzvah is that there should be the kind of sustainable relationships that provide for an earth that is sustained by people being Isaac in period of Arivia. That's the issue. Therefore, Yibam is the same thing. So if the Torah says to be Miyabim, then that means that it's a chiv on Bezdin to make, that's why it says, V'dibruei lav, it's a chiyav on Bezdin to make sure that this is not a mechanical act, but that this is a real yibum. And in order to do that, they have to see that there's a sustainable relationship. And therefore, if there are obvious, really basic, non-matchable issues, such as he's 90 years old and she's 13, you know, that does not make for a very good marriage. Or vice versa. So somebody's going to be very unhappy. So therefore, they say to him, what are you going on hanging around with this young chick forever? It says, go get somebody your own age. What kind of weird statement is that? What am I hanging around? I'm here to do a mitzvah, the Torah. You're telling me, what am I hanging around? So you see that that's mamish the point. Otherwise, the whole thing is crazy. Or vice versa. We say to him, what are you going after an old woman for? Well, you got some kind of problem. Again, what a funny statement. Of course, I'm trying to do my mitzvah. Obviously, this is the point. So, kolach etzo shekamotcha, go find a match for yourself. Va'al tachnis kitata letoch betcha, don't bring battles into your home. You don't need a relationship where you could see up front what is bound to occur. Omer Rava Omer Reb Nachman. Halacha l'maisa, we paskin like the Tanakama. And that chalitza is b'shlosha. And since we find this Mishnah not even mentioning the sheet of Reb Yehuda at all, so this is a stam Mishnah that indicates that we certainly go like the Tanakhama. Even though, as the Mefarshim point out, even though you could say that Reb Yehuda's tam is more mefurish and more natural in the pasuk, and therefore we don't have the normal halakha of going lefi the rabbim against the yachid. In this case, the Mishnah, stam Mishnah, is making it clear that we go like the Tanakhama. So Omar le Rav le Reb Nachman, well, I mean, if you're telling me that that's the case, that if we have a stam Mishnah that runs against the Shita of five, we should paskin the same way when it comes to Mion, because we have a machlokas. Again, do we need three people for Mion, or do we need two people for Mion, and it's just Eidos and so on? It's the same thing. Now, Tosis points out, what do you mean it's the same thing? Because we paskin like one stam Mishnah, so that means we have to paskin like every stam Mishnah. What kind of weird thing is that? So Tosis explains that all over. The dinim of Mion and Chalitza are brought together because they are very similar. In other words, they're walking out on a marriage. That's the point. And we find them always quoted together. And that's why it's saying, if we're using the Stam Mishnah to Paskin like Rav Yehuda over here, then we should use the Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin that just says, again, Ha-Miun V'Ha-Chalitza, see, they're put together. Ha-Miun V'Chalitza B'Shlosha. So we should Paskin that we need three Dayanim for Miun. So you'll say, okay, fine, so Paskin. V'chitei Machinami, so what's your problem? So maybe that's the din, but it isn't. Because V'atanya, in the Braita, it says, Miun, Beit Shammai Omrim, you need to have a Bezdin Mumchim. And Beis Hillel says, it can be before Bezdin, and it doesn't need a Bezdin, Shelo Bifnei Bezdin. But both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree that you need Shlosha. The question is whether you need Dayanim or even Ediotot. Okay, but There is another shita, and that's Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yuna, Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yossi. They are machsher even bishnayim, and it's the same Rabbi Nachman, Om Rabbi Yossi Bar Minyumi, Om Rabbi Nachman, Alocha Koto Azug, that we paskin like Rabbi Yossi Bar Minyumi, like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yuna, and Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yossi, that you do not need three at all. You only need basically eidim. So how come you don't go according to that Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Nachman? Well, there's only one Stam Mishnah over there by Mion that you need three. But over here, we've got two Stam Mishnahs that we need Chalitza. We have our Mishnah, and we have the Mishnah we just quoted from Sanhedrin. Mion and Chalitza Bishlosha. Put two together, double Stammies are an absolute halacha. Because by Mion, we also have double Stammies. Because we have another Mishnah that says exactly the same thing, which we had before over here. Remember, there was a question of whether if you are a member of a Beis Din and you were matir a woman to leave her husband, can you ever marry that woman? Or are people going to say, aha, he obviously always wanted that girl, and therefore, even though she really was an Eishes Ish, he said that she's... Why not? I mean, this is Haser Mimcha Ikshut Svatayim. It's an interesting passage. People are so unbelievably perverted, and they're going to say the most insane things. What can you do? You have to worry about that also. So therefore, if there's Ikshut Svatayim, so then it's usher to marry her. So, but over there, the Mishnah said before, we had this early in the Masechet, that in the event that a judge was only a member of a miyun or a chalitza, then he can marry her because he is a Beis Din. And people are going to chash it that all the Beis Din got together so that this guy can have this girl. That's ridiculous. Nobody's going to say that. I mean, there's a limit to ikshut. Maybe there once was. But anyway, so therefore over there he can go ahead and get married to her. But how come if it just takes for granted Mipnei Shehu Beis Din, then it's basically saying as a Stam Mishnah that Miyun needs Shlosha. So we have two Stam Mishnahs that Miyun needs Shlosha. So why do you paskin that Chalitza, you said, needs Shlosha based on the Stam Mishnah plus another Stam Mishnah in Sanhedrin? Masha Ein came by Miyun, you said it doesn't need Shlosha. You said Alocha Koto Azug. That's inconsistent, Reb Nachman. Okay, I changed my mind. Three stammies get it against two stammies. Two stammies don't count. So, awesome. Trey stammy, and over here with Chalitza, we have the three stammies. Because over there in that same mission, it was talking about me, and it was talking about Chalitza, and it said, you don't have to worry if you were mad to the woman as Chalitza, because you're a best, and ah. So you see, there's three. Okay, come on. Who ever heard? Show me one place where we have battles of Stam Mishnahs. And here on the right, we've got three Stammies. And over there on the left side of the ring, we've got two Stammies. This is crazy. Our Stam of our Stam. I don't care how many Stam Mishnahs there are, for God's sake. Mali Chad Stam, Mali Trey Stam, Mali Tlata Stam. What's the difference? Do we or do we not basken like a Stam Mishnah? All right. So let's figure out why it is, in fact, that Rav Nachman paskened this way. Says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, no, you're missing the point. The reason that we said over here that the halacha is that it's b'shlosha is because this stam is in together with, if you take a look in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that we quoted, it's together with Rav Yehuda, who for some reason does not argue. Because look at the beginning. The Mishnah starts over there. Smichat zekenim ve'egla rufa bishlosha divi Rabbi Yossi. Look at this. Rabbi Yehuda emer b'chamisha. So that means that the same machlokas that we had over here in the Braisa about whether you need chamisha for chalitza appears in the beginning of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin menogeya smichat zekenim ve'egla rufa, right? But then the Mishnah continues. Ha-chalitza v'ameyonim b'shlosha. Now, you're ready to hear Rabbi Yehuda. No. It's b'chamisha. But he doesn't say a thing. Now, how come he doesn't say a thing? I'll tell you why. Because that's the whole point in the Mishnah. It's trying to say Rabbi Yehuda has pulled out. So, shmaminam, that even Rabbi Yehuda, who was the one that we quoted before in the Braita, he says five. But he changed his mind because over here he does not argue. Now that we don't see by Mion, it doesn't bring Oto Azug and then say that the Zug is no longer arguing about Shammai Beit Hillel. Oh, my Rava. Some other curious things, once we're looking at the pasuk. The Dayanim have to define the place where Chalitza is being done. It's not, you just can't arbitrarily say, okay, let's do the Chalitza, here's the girl, let's do the Chalitza. Because it says, Ve'alta yevimto ha-sha'ara, el-azakenim, so the mashma is ha-sha'ara, the place which we've actually designated as International Chalitza Center. Okay, so then they have to go up to a specific place. What exactly that means is a machlokas rishonim. Can you define it right then and there? Okay, we hereby dub the International Chalitza Center. Or does it have to be defined from before? Can it be defined on the same day? Does it have to be from, whatever. Many different shitas. Okay, but again, we're just getting the general halachas here. Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, they actually insisted on having five people in a chalitza case. What? Didn't we just, come on, Reb Yehuda? I mean, we just showed that even Reb Yehuda no longer holds that you need five. So why did they say you need five? They can't out Reb Yehuda, can they? So what in the world was the five? No, they wanted more people there because it's very important that the word gets out that she is a proper chalitza. Because, first of all, Kohanim need to know that she's a chalutza in order not to marry her. But there's another thing, which is that the more people talk about the fact that she's a chalutza, the more likely she is to win a Zionist award. No, I'm sorry, one second, that's the wrong chalutza. No, the more the word gets out that she's a chalutza, the more people might look to her for a shidduch. So like this, somebody calls up, hey, listen, there's this girl who was married, poor girl, her husband died. Yeah, but you know what? There's probably a problem with chalitza. I don't want to go out with her. But if everybody knows that she's a chalitza, so then fine. So then she'll get more offers. Rav Ashi once comes to Rav Kahana for play a visit, and Rav Kahana said, ah, wonderful, you came just at the right minute. I was looking for five people, and I only had four people. You walked in, mamish minash amayim, solik mar legaban lamaluya bechamisha. Omer of Kahana, haveka imna kameu the Rabbi Yehuda, and he said to me, listen, get up there, you know, where we have, like in the field, we've got all of those reeds that we gathered, turned them into bundles, right? So they look like chairs. Okay, so go and sit down over there, put up the sign, International Chalitza Center, so that we can have a chalitza over there, and ta sak lezirza de kani, go up to the reed bundles, and go up, and we'll need you to join up with five people. So Omar Lo, maybe you should say, what do you need five people for? Omar Lo, and he said, beferish, keecha bilafar samil, so we just want everybody to know. And another meister was Shmuel bar Yehuda, Avikai came to Rav Yehuda, and he said to him, "Go up, Lazir Zedekani, Litz Tarufi bar Chamisha." He said, "Beferish leforsume milsa." Omar Leiser of Shmuel bar Yehuda said, "I can't go. Why? Because the Braita says Tanina be Yisrael, and we said before that means that it has to be a Bezdin Shel Yisrael, but Lo Bezdin Shel Gerim, and I am a Ger." So therefore, I am not qualified to go up there, says Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Omer Rav Yehuda, you know, this guy is such a mensch. I mean, because, listen, Lamaisa, he was only being called up to be an extra mouth to spread the words, right? So basically, he was just there as the CNN reporter. Well, not saying nobody would believe that she's a chalutza, but some other reporter where maybe they say the truth every once in a while. So he wasn't really part of the best. Rav Yehuda was being very nice. He didn't want to say, I'm only calling you for pirsume. So he pretended like, you know, go up there when you eat five people because he's mechabim. Nonetheless, he wanted to make it very clear that your phraseology is unacceptable and I will not go up there because I'm a ger. I mean, this is embarrassing to him. I'm disqualified because I'm a ger. I mean, that's, you know, what's he putting down gerim? It was very inappropriate. But the fact is that he's such an honest person that he wanted to make very clear that no one should make the mistake of thinking that maybe it would be a Beis Din Shel Gerim is kosher. So Rav Yehuda said, this guy is so honest that if he told me something, I would believe him as if he's two witnesses, and I would collect money from people based on his testimony alone. What do you mean? I mean, you can't take money from someone because you believe him. I mean, the Torah says, Al pi shnei edim, Amar Rachmona, well, you're going to say, well, I know. You're not allowed to do that. No, what I meant was, says Rav Yehuda, I would actually refuse to act on a document, which is an ashtar, if he would come along and say, listen, that document I happen to know was paid. I was present when the guy paid it up. And even though, I mean, so what? So somebody tells you that, so therefore a shtar is not a kosher shtar? I would not act on the basis of such a shtar. So passively, I would trust him more than I would trust the shtar. That a Dayan has a right to do. If he feels that something is inadmissible as evidence, he can do that. So I wouldn't accept the shtar. That's what I'm saying. This guy's honesty is beyond belief.